Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:07 p.m. Today is Pacific Summer. It's Pacific Summer Time, and today is September 27th. Well, the dollar was quite firm in here today. It's we see the euro here pulling back by 88 ticks, but more importantly, it's encountering resistance in the region of the trend mean. The point I've been making over the course of the last few sessions has been that the dollar's death has been greatly exaggerated. This is a clear downward dynamic in favor of the dollar here, and it confirms resistance in the region of the trend mean. The simple matter of the fact is that Europe has got a lot of challenges, and these are a long way from having been surmounted. Italy today decided that it was going to have a deficit of 2.4%. Well, that has not had a particularly deleterious effect on their bond market, and the yield reversed an earlier pop up towards that 3% level. But the harsh reality is that Italy's borrowing costs are unlikely to get back to where they were between December and April. This higher level is likely to persist indefinitely and could potentially even do more than that if Italy's administration don't in fact keep to their budget. Well, the other currency that really had a significant move today against the dollar was the yen, and the yen pulled back rather sharply, and here we have the dollar breaking out to new recovery highs. But I think it is more important to look at the weekly chart, because what that really helps to confirm now is that the dollar has demonstrated at least near-term, potentially even medium-term support around the 110 area, and this has been a really quite lengthy hiatus for the dollar's rally, considering that the peak for the dollar was back in 2015. Then it gave up about half of its advance in 2016, and it's been pretty much range-bound since. Well, the reality is that Japan is still engaged in quantitative easing and has very little appetite for a stronger currency, and the USA is still raising interest rates. So there is a backdrop to continued dollar dominance there. But when we look at the stock market in Japan, well, it posted a downside key reversal in here today. Now, the Nikkei has raced from the low in early September up to the peak that we saw last in January. So it's not at all beyond the bounds of possibility that we're going to get some pause of consolidation now. But that's probably likely to represent a buying opportunity, particularly if the yen continues to weaken. Considering that there is a short-term overbought condition, it's quite possible that the upper side of that underlying trading range may be retested. But a sustained move below the trend mean would really be required to question that this isn't still a bull market environment. And when we look at the very long-term chart, then there is a clear upward bias to trading, particularly since the lows in late 2011, and this looks like a new bull market environment. It's been an awfully long time since we could utter the word secular bull market and in the same sentence as Japan, but that is what this looks like, and there is certainly the possibility for continued upside, despite the fact that in the short term the more likely scenario is that we're going to get a little bit of consolidation. Then when we pull it back and look at what's going on Wall Street, the S&P 500 was in positive territory in here today, but not quite able to hold on to all of its gain. The primary leadership in the market today was in the technology sector, but there were two main performers. Amazon, among the very large cap companies, was up in a dynamic manner, and this is a very clear upward dynamic that we've seen this week. So that confirms the most recent of the sequence of higher reaction lows, and as long as it is putting in those higher reaction lows, well, then this will be a bull market environment. But then we've also started to see a return to performance of the biotech sector, and it is now coming back to challenge the peak we saw a few weeks ago. But there is a clear upward bias to trading since the lows put in 2016. But it's been a choppy environment, generally speaking. But when we think about the fact that there is incredible at innovation that's going on in the healthcare sector, which has been driven by CRISPR and gene editing technology, synthetic biology, and the fact that you have big data that is accelerating the pace with which various compounds can be tested, and then you have a friendlier environment among the regulators. Well, that's all good news for pharmaceuticals generally, but biotechnology represents the growth in the sector, and this continues to represent a bull market environment. And there is potential here for biotech to start to pick up some of the running in terms of relative performance, not least because it has sat out the performance that we've seen, for example, on the semiconductors index over the course of the last year. I think if we think about the potential for rotation, then there is certainly scope here for the semiconductors to give way to an emerging, more convincing bull market environment in terms of biotechnology. Then, when we look at the commodity sector, well, the strength of the dollar hasn't done any particular favors for gold, and it broke down from its range in here today. So it has been ranging in a very inert manner for the last month, and ranges are explosions waiting to happen, and now it is breaking on the downside. Well, the relative weakness of the dollar over the course of the last month has been a tailwind for gold, but it didn't result in the share, or excuse me, in the price rallying in any kind of really convincing way. But the first hint of dollar strength coming back in has resulted in the gold price breaking lower. Well, it's going to require a very clear upper dynamic tomorrow if this is going to countermand this bearish signal. So when we look at that on a weekly basis, there has certainly been a pause around the $1,200 level, but there's been a distinct absence of clear upward dynamics to break the downtrend, and that is not particularly encouraging. So therefore, we have to at least give some credence to the possibility that the lows put in August are not going to hold. Then, when we look at what's going on with silver, well, silver prices had not quite been able to push back up into the overhead trading range, and now they have pulled back from the $14.50 level, but they were off their lows in here today. So this has not yet broken to a new low, but still there's a rivetingly consistent progression of lower rally highs, successions of ranges one below another. And as long as that remains the case, well, then this is still a consistent downtrend. And we know what needs to happen in order to countermand that bearish environment. We need to see the sequence of lower rally highs broken, a midpoint danger line stop triggered. Well, we did see a midpoint danger line stop triggered in platinum. And now it has pulled back by over $16 in here today, and it's coming back towards the $8,800 level. Well, we've had more evidence of support coming back to demand coming back to dominance in platinum than we have in either silver or gold, but it needs to hold that sequence of higher reaction lows if support building is going to remain credible. Then, when we look at copper, where it had by far the biggest jump of the metals, well, now it is right in the region of the trend mean, so we're getting some pause. But copper has not pulled back to in by nearly the same extent as some of the precious metals. There has been a clear break in the sequence of lower rally highs. This does look quite different to what we've seen in the precious metals. So that would suggest that there is a more convincing argument that the industrial resources have demonstrated more than just short-term support, but they will need to hold the advance put in so far. Now, zinc prices also staged a very impressive rally last week, and that's the biggest upward dynamic we've seen. Now, when we think about upward dynamics, particularly after exaggerated declines on the downside, well, they do need to stand out on the chart. So that's why H&M is, I think, a good example in here today. The share trended lower in a really very rhythmic manner from the beginning of 2015 until the beginning of 2018, and it certainly accelerated in the latter stages of that decline. But the rally that's been put in over the last 2 weeks is the most significant rally that we've seen in years. But more importantly than that, it has successfully broken up out of the most recent range. It is trading back above the trend mean for the first time since late 2015. And this looks different on the chart. This is, I think, one of the big lessons when we think about dynamics, that it absolutely has to stand out. It has to be something that someone looking at a chart will say, wow, something really did happen this day. And that has certainly been the case in here with an almost 10% rally in here today for H&M. Well, that does suggest that the worst is over. The CEO said just as much in here today. But I thought I would highlight it simply as a really good example of clear upper dynamics following a really very significant downtrend. Well, when we think about that, there is the other side of this equation, that markets have been trending higher in a rhythmic manner for a substantial period of time already. And the S&P 500 has continued to hold this progression of higher reaction lows, but it does have this overbought condition relative to the trend mean. Well, when we think about the breakout that we saw, for example, in 2016, it pulled back to the mean and then kept going, and it really didn't come back to test the mean again in all of 2017, and it was just in the first couple of months of this year that we saw the mean reversion. So that would suggest that there is scope for additional upside, but if that's going to be credible, then the sequence of higher reaction lows needs to continue to hold. Well, we know that we are in the potentially latter stages of this bull market because interest rates are rising, but financial conditions are still relatively easy. Goldman Sachs has got a financial conditions index, and I think it's worth taking a look at, or then there's also the Bloomberg Financial Conditions Index. And what this suggests is that financial conditions were tighter back in 2016 than they are right now. So we're still in a pretty accommodative situation where the interest rate is just about neutral, and even that depends on how one defines what the inflation rate is. So there is certainly potential here for the Federal Reserve to continue to raise interest rates because they need to rearm the interest rate gun before the next recession. Well, this is also the period where we would, I think, anticipate that there's going to be some form of acceleration. Well, we certainly saw some acceleration at the beginning of this year, and we're seeing an increasing number of shares that have really been going up in a much more aggressive manner than at any time really since the dawn of this bull market 10 years ago. So TJX is a really good example of that. It had trended higher in a really impressive manner all the way through to 2013, and then lost momentum somewhat and had been dipping below the trend mean, but then it really took off this year. And it's becoming increasingly overextended relative to the trend mean. Amazon is another example of a growing acceleration. Then people are starting to talk about the possibility of a bubble evolving in the cannabis stocks. Canopy Growth Corp, for example, went from 30 to 70 in a very short period of time, and it's consolidating. There was some speculation last week that Coca-Cola might be willing to take a piece of Aurora Cannabis, so that share has also gone up about 100% in just the last few months. But I would hesitate to call this a bubble. This is the beginning of a very large market that was previously deemed to be illegal. So I don't think it's overly enthusiastic that there's going to be additional interest in this market. But what we would anticipate is that if this is the latter stages of a major bull market, that it's the cyclical shares should be doing better, and the return to performance of the biotech sector certainly fits that category. The return to performance of the industrial resources fits into that category. The fact that interest rates are rising, but inflation has not yet started to become a problem, tells us that this is still a reasonably benign environment. When I was looking last night, I had a chat with a broker friend of mine, and we were talking about when exactly was the last time that the Fed raised interest rates by 50 basis points. Well, it was 1994. That feels like, excuse me, that's not true. It was 2000. It was the last time that the Federal Reserve raised interest rates by 50 basis points, excuse me, was in the first month of January of 2000. So that was the last interest rate hike before the Nasdaq crash. And that has probably chastened the Fed into ever raising rates by 50 basis points again. They would have to be really afraid of inflationary pressures or a massive overheating in the economy to do that again. So we can anticipate that they're going to keep going with the 50 or the 25 basis point hikes for the foreseeable future. And eventually that will represent a headwind. Something that I was looking at earlier on in here today is the high yield sector, and spreads are back below the trend mean. They have contracted pretty aggressively over the course of the last few months. I've often referred to Tesla as a canary in the coal mine. Well, it was in negative territory in here today, but and it is now testing the region of the trend mean, but it has not declined or collapsed. And Netflix, which is also in the high yield sector, has bounced and continues to improve, having found support in the region of the trend mean. So these don't suggest that there is an imminent problem. It doesn't necessarily mean that they will survive a widening of high yield spreads whenever that occurs, but they're not under any kind of credit duress right now. Well, when we think about what's going on in terms of emerging markets, well, Argentina has secured its bailout from the IMF, but the peso is coming right back to test this 40 area, and that area is going to have to hold if we're going to give the benefit of the doubt to steadying. Then you've got the Turkish lira, which has been appreciating, and Turkey is starting to make nice with Germany, so they are certainly looking for international partners, which is probably good news. Then the Chinese renminbi, which has paused over around the 6.9 area, continues to weaken. They have, well, Li Keqiang just a couple of weeks ago was saying that they're not going to use the currency as a weapon in a trade war, but I really don't think anybody believes that. And the more likely scenario is that we are going to see additional downside for the renminbi. Well, the Indian rupee remains under pressure, and we saw additional downward pressure coming to bear on the banking sector in here today. That's another clear downward dynamic, but it's being led lower again by Yes Bank, and it shaved another 9% off the share price in here today. This is a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. There isn't a great deal of evidence yet to suggest that it is over, and this is likely to represent a headwind for the banking sector for the medium term, and that continues to weigh on the Nifty. But I think it's also worth considering that this is very much an internal problem, and India has got a significant number of companies that generate just about all their income externally. The weakness of the rupee is a benefit for those companies. So Tata Consultancy is a clear outperformer. Reliance Industries is not in the banking sector, but it is largely an internal company, but it is also reasonably steady in here. So that I think does help to suggest that this problem is highly localized in the banking sector and in the housing sector, but that doesn't necessarily mean that these shares will be absolved from any kind of selling pressure if the rout in the banking sector persists or indeed spreads to the state-owned banking sector. If that were to occur, well, then that is likely to represent really quite a significant challenge for just about all of the Indian stock market. So what I think that's the I think the takeaway is that banks are liquidity providers. When banks are not producing, or when they're experiencing significant issues, then that is a headwind for the entire market. But it also suggests that the kinds of companies that would bounce first would be those that don't have that particular domestic influence, like Tata Consultancy or Reliance Industries. So I think India does represent more of a challenge than we've seen in a while. What I think is also, I'll never forget that when the Congress Party won the election all the way, golly, it was more than a decade ago, the market pulled back very sharply and everyone was panicking, but then it turned around really very quickly. This rationalization of the banking sector, the forcing them to tackle their non-performing loans problem, is good news in the medium to longer term, despite the fact that it represents a challenge in the short term. Now, when we look at resources-oriented markets, well, the Australian market was in mildly negative territory in here today, and it's not particularly consistent, but it so far has held the move above the trend mean. There is the potential here that the Australian economy will outperform, but the Australian dollar was down again in here today. This continues to hold its sequence of lower rally highs. And as long as it's doing that, well, then this can be considered to be a reasonably consistent downtrend. So that doesn't necessarily mean that the 70 cent level is going to be the terminal point of this downtrend. Australia has an interest in having a weaker currency right now, and it does look like it is going to get it. So I think that is also one of the other points, that the dollar's rally is continuing, that acts as a tailwind for U.S. assets. It's certainly been a tailwind for the stock market, but it's also a tailwind for the bond market. And we saw yields were a little bit weaker in here today, coming back to the 3.05 level, but there's been a real distinct absence of clear downward dynamics, and so far this move above 3% has persisted. So as long as the 10-year yield is holding the 3% level, well, the longer it does that, the more likely it is that the next breakout will be on the upside. But we have the complication in the Treasury market that there's a lot of additional supply. When we look at the TIPS market, then there is no additional supply. And the yield is up now to 90 basis points. It's right at the upper side of this range that's persisted since 2013. Well, it was also pulling back from the upper side of its range yesterday, but it was a little bit firmer in terms of the yield. But if it breaks successfully above 1%, well, then that will be clear indication that we're in a supply-dominated environment for the bond market, whereas it's still arguable right now. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.